Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Kadampa Center. I'm Robbie Watkins. I'm one of the members of the center, and I will be assisting in the discussion this morning as we continue our exploration of the 16 guidelines. And we're going to start with some prayers, and I think Andre will be our chant master this morning. Venerable Andre. We'll turn the floor over to him.
So we'll start with the in your prayer books page. So I can move to this one, and take that three times. Then we'll do four immeasurables in English. We'll do four immeasurables in
Yeah, if you want to. It's up to you. You're the boss. You're driving this car.
So we'll go ahead and begin with something.
Ta, o, mune, mune, ma, mune, so, ya, ta, o, Mune, ma, munaye, soa, tayata, o, mune, mune, ma, munaye, soa. Beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering, causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friend and hatred for enemies. Day way gyurda den pa gyurshik duge damdu nevge gyurda wa meditation. See, do we have anyone who's here for the very first time today? Okay, welcome. So we'll give you a little bit of instruction. Let's see. Let me get all my toys here. So hold on just a second. Thank you. Yeah, I'll use this one. Thank you. Okay. So we'll begin with maybe 10 minutes, a little bit longer, of meditation. Meditation in the Tibetan tradition is defined as becoming familiar with. Nothing mystical or bizarre. It's just working with our mind. So it's using our mind to become familiar with the chosen object. And today we'll be doing a simple breathing meditation. First, we begin by checking our posture. I've got my keys in my pocket, and I notice right away they're distracting, so I'm going to take those out. Take my wallet out of my other pocket. Start with our legs. If you're sitting on a cushion, sit towards the front of the cushion a little bit. Your legs can be crossed in any position that you find comfortable and stable. If you're sitting in a chair, try and get your feet flat on the floor. If you want a cushion underneath your feet, that's fine. Your back is a little bit straighter than you normally sit. Arms are away from your torso. Right hand on left with thumbs touching. Head straight on your shoulders. Lips slightly closed, teeth not clenched, tongue against the upper gum, the back side. Eyes lightly closed or either slightly open, but not clenched, closed. Head straight, not tilted to one side or the other, but just a couple degrees in front of the vertical, but not leaning forward. It's sometimes said that the posture is regal, a little bit more alert, a little bit more definite or intentional than we would normally sit. So begin by checking your posture. If you notice any sources of tension or discomfort, go ahead and deal with them now. If you need to wiggle or stretch something out, that's fine. The point of the posture being not that it's uncomfortable or stressful, but it's solid and stable so that once it's established during the meditation, you no longer need to pay attention to it. And once we establish our posture, the next thing we pay attention to is our breath. We'll begin with a simple 9-round breathing meditation. 3 breaths in and out through the right nostril. 3 breaths in and out through the left nostril. And then 3 breaths in and out through both nostrils. Using our hand to close off the nostril we're not using. So I'll close the left nostril and take 3 breaths in and out through our right nostril. As we do these, breathe from the abdomen so that the stomach expands on the in-breath. It's okay to make a little bit of noise as you do this. Now, three breaths in and out through the left nostril. And three breaths in and out through both nostrils. And now we allow our breathing to return to its normal pattern. And we take a moment to set our motivation for doing the meditation that follows. As much as possible, we generate the bodhicitta motivation, the wish to become enlightened for the benefit of all living beings. It may seem a little bit grandiose or impossible, but even if we forcefully think of that way, it creates incredible merit. I'm doing this meditation this morning so that I can improve my mind, so that I can be of benefit to all living beings. Let's just think along that way for a moment. And having set our motivation, we now begin the actual meditation. As I said earlier, meditation is becoming familiar with. And in this meditation, we're just going to become familiar with our breath, the physical sensation of the breath moving in and out through our nostrils. That's all. Just pay attention to that. Breath moving in and out through the nostrils. We pay attention to that. And every time we notice that we're not paying attention to it, that our mind has wandered off to some memory or fantasy or thought about something we need to do when we leave the center today or a physical sensation, we just set that aside and come back to the breath, over and over, back to the breath, becoming familiar with that process of pulling the mind back to the breath. So just breath in and out through the nostrils. That's all that our mind perceives. Mind on the breath. No distinction, no separation. and you can relax your concentration. Seems like this is a pretty serious group of meditators. I think we could have gone on for another 30 minutes. Anybody have any questions or comments about that meditation? Everybody seems quite comfortable with it. So, who was here 2 weeks ago when I started to talk on the 16 guidelines? Okay. Who was here last week and I was out of town? Yeah. Did Venerable Lama talk? And what did she talk about? Kindness. Okay, and what did she say about kindness?
Well, we broke into groups.
Mm-hmm.
We discussed acts of kindness.
Okay.
That we received that were important
mm-hmm.
to us. And then we talked about that as a group.
Okay, great. Okay. So, today we're continuing the discussion on the 16 guidelines. Let me pull up some of my notes here. The 16 guidelines are not an actual topic that the Buddha himself taught, but they are very consistent with the teachings of the Buddha, and very much a way of summing up, a very accurate way of summing up his how to act in a lot of ways. And this is a big project of the FPMT, the Foundation for the Preservation of the Mahayana Tradition, the organization that we're part of, a worldwide organization. And the 16 Guidelines is a specific project directed by Alison Murdoch, who's based in England. But Denise Flora, who a lot of people know here at Kadampa Center, is very involved in working on this. It's a curriculum that can be used both for young people and for adults. And it's a kind of very sort of secular way to become familiar with the principles of Buddhism. And so the 16 Guidelines was something that was, oops, that's left over from another class. We're not talking about the six preparatory practices. As always in Tibetan Buddhism, there are lists with numbers of things. So what we're going to be talking about for the next few weeks in Geshe-la's absence is the 16 guidelines. This was created by a Tibetan king back in the 6th or 7th century. 16 guidelines. So we'll just review them. Does anybody remember what the first category of these is? There are 16 divided by 4 nicely. So there are 4 categories of 4 each. 2 weeks ago we talked about the first category. Does anybody remember what those were? How we think. Yes. Okay. Great. Thank you. How we think. Today we'll talk a little bit about how we, does anybody remember what the next one was? Act, okay. And next one is, and I have to look at my notes on these myself. Third one is how we relate to others. And the fourth category is, anybody know what that is? Yes, thank you. How we find meaning, okay. So under each of these 4 categories, there are 4 topics. Under how we think, anybody remember what those were? We talked about those 2 weeks ago. Humility. Let's see, yes, thank you, Andre. Want to keep going on those? No. Okay. Contentment. And delight. Today we're going to talk a little bit about how we act. Anybody know what those are? Kindness is one of those, which we talked about last week. So we'll skip that. We're experts on kindness now. We don't need to work on that one anymore. Check that one off. Done. On to the next one. Honesty. I'm going to change the order a little bit. Right speech. And then put as the last one, generosity. And then how we relate to others. Respect. Forgiveness. Let's say gratitude and loyalty. And then how we find meaning. Anybody remember any of those? They're kind of strange. Aspiration. Principles. Service. And courage. Okay, so 16 guidelines, how we think, how we act, how we relate to others, how we find meaning, with four under each of those. And these are, I mean, if you could follow all 16 of those, you'd be a pretty good person, I think. I think you'd probably have a lot of friends or people would want to be around you. And, again, there's nothing, this is just based on general principles of Buddhism. This is kind of the format that they use for the children's program here at Kadampa Center. Denise Flora has been very involved in getting these set up in a way that works for kids at different ages. So today we're going to talk about how we act. And last week, Venerable Lamo talked about kindness. And just to go back to get the bigger picture, 16 guidelines, these are things that we actively do. Okay, these are ways to act. And thinking about these, I like to contrast these with another list that's very popular. We always do lists in Tibetan Buddhism, the 10 non-virtuous actions. I'm running out of ink here. 10 non-virtuous actions. So, if we think about non-virtuous actions, what do we mean by non-virtuous? Why do we call actions non-virtuous? That sounds very judgmental in a lot of ways. What does non-virtuous mean in the Buddhist view of things? I go, boo, 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 what? A little louder, please. Actions that lead to suffering, yeah. Suffering for who? For the person who does them, okay? The Buddha's saying, you know, I'm not judging or anything, but if you do these things, you're going to suffer, okay? They may hurt other people very well, but you know that they will hurt yourself. Maybe not immediately, but down the road, the results of acting in this way are suffering, which means physical and mental pain. So the Buddha said there are 10 non-virtuous actions, and you divide those into actions of body, speech, and mind, because those are the three ways we act. Oh, thanks, Tim. So, the three non-virtuous actions of body are, just to review a little bit, killing, okay? What else? Stealing. And sexual misconduct, which is a loaded topic, but generally means having sex with someone else's partner or sex in a way that causes pain. Okay. Non-virtuous actions of speech. Lying. divisive speech, okay? Yeah, idle gossip is the way it's often put. And there's one before that. Harsh speech. Okay. Lying is pretty clear. Divisive speech, speech that separates people, that breaks people up into factions. Harsh speech, excessively critical speech. And idle gossip, just wasting our time. You know, it doesn't mean you can't shoot the breeze, yes, excusez-moi, with your buddies. But, you know, if you spend your entire precious human rebirth doing that, that's considered a negative action. Okay, and those of mind are? Anger, the wish to harm others. Yeah. Not self-cherishing so much, but attachment, covetousness, yeah. Craving, yeah. Attachment. And the last one is wrong view or ignorance, which means not seeing reality as it is. Self-attachment is a big part of that. Not understanding karma, not seeing reality as the way it is. So these are the 10 non-virtuous actions. These are the things the Buddha said to avoid if you don't want to suffer, okay? He's not saying, don't do these because I'm God and I'm telling you this. I'm just saying, based on my experience, if you do these, you will inevitably suffer, have physical and mental pain. So it's just a general guideline. So these are the things not to do. Then, on the other hand, we have the things to do, okay? So these are things to avoid, these are things to do, and they kind of correlate, but they're not in the exact same structure in that a lot of these patience and contentment, delight come under mind. Some of them, how we act now, we're talking about body and speech primarily today. The Buddha gave them in this order on the 10 non-virtuous actions to avoid, and that the ones of body are the easiest ones to work with. Okay, those. Let's start with those. Speech is a little bit more difficult. Controlling our mind is extremely difficult. Okay, so don't be frustrated if you find that you can't get rid of these negative actions of mind. At least don't kill or steal. That's a tremendous spiritual accomplishment if you do that. Any comments or thoughts about those? Okay. So, we'll get rid of those because it's not really what we're talking about. So today we're going to two weeks ago, I talked about how we think. Humility, patience, contentment, and delight. That's working with the mind. Really hard to do, but the Buddhist point of view is these are qualities that we can cultivate. We're not stuck with the way we think we are. We can develop these qualities in our mind. Today, we're going to talk about how we act, which is a little bit easier, I think, actually, than how we think. So, Venerable Lamo talked about kindness last week. Anybody want to take a definition, stab at defining kindness? What is kindness? Okay, just you, okay. Yeah, okay, treating others with respect, okay. I'm going to use the definition that's given in this book, 16 Guidelines for Life, which is the root text on this. Kindness says, I want you to be happy. Okay, it's the wish that others be happy, which is really very similar to love. To be kind means to be friendly, caring, generous, benevolent, considerate, respectful, fair, and affectionate. Do you want to say something? Yeah. Yes, okay, without attachment of something in return. Okay, thank you. Yeah. Okay, yeah, so I'm not going to talk about that a lot since I was covered last week. Honesty. Who wants to take a stab at honesty? I think we pretty much know what that means.
Not lying.
Not lying, okay.
Being truthful despite consequences?
Yeah, okay. Sometimes being honest doesn't bring immediate happiness and joy, yeah. The Buddha is saying that all of these, actually, in the long term, they do bring happiness. We have to trust in that, okay? It may seem like short term, they may bring problems, but long term, they do bring happiness. Yeah. Yeah, you want to expand on that?
No, I was just saying, even though sometimes being honest may cause you some temporary suffering, in the long run, it's the right practice.
Mm-hmm.
It's not being honest to be hurt, you know.
Yeah. This is going to hurt you more than hurts me. Hurts me more than hurts you or whatever, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we always have to look at our motivation.
Right. Exactly, motivation.
That's what it always comes down to. Yeah, over here. Well, let's go back here. Yeah, Tim, back there in the... Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You want to expand on that a little bit? Yeah.
I don't know. I guess it's really kind of justifying actions.
Yes.
About how we interacted with someone, how we treated someone. I think we did the right thing, but deep down inside, we know we didn't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think it comes back to realizing that accepting where we are in our spiritual path, that our motivation is always going to be mixed. It's going to be a combination of virtuous intentions and non-virtuous intentions, and we need to accept that and just try and cultivate the virtuous intentions more, but not come down on ourselves for that. You know, we're human. We have to acknowledge that. Yeah. Let's see, Andre, let's see, Chris, you... Okay, so just talk loudly, Andre, please.
Yeah, I was thinking in terms of not being honest with ourselves, I think sometimes we have these delusional thoughts about ourselves, and we believe these delusions. So I think, in effect, we're lying to ourselves by thinking that...
So, what are the delusions we have about ourselves? Yeah.
Well, sometimes we think, I know I have occasionally feel that, and actually believe that I'm much kinder than I really am.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Therefore, we have these solutions.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, but we can have them both ways. Also, we can underestimate our kindness also. We can put ourselves down, I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's where wisdom comes in, seeing things as they are. Yeah, I mean, when we're looking at ourselves and our motivations and our actions, there's all sorts of ifs and ands or buts there. Yeah. Any other? Yeah.
Better than or less than conundrum. You know, like you're trying to get in the middle someplace.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking you're better than everybody or less than everybody.
Yeah.
That's the delusion, better or worse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, this is where wisdom comes in. I mean, it's, you know, we look at our motivations, our reasons, argue ourselves into circles nonstop. We just have to acknowledge that we're human, we're not perfect, we're working. You know, look at our motivation as much as possible, generate the motivation that we're doing something for the benefit of others, but accept that we're not Buddhas yet. We're not completely compassionate, we're not completely wise, and have some patience with ourselves. If we go back to how we think, have some patience with ourselves, not just with others. Okay, and have some delight when we do virtuous actions. Don't immediately start undercutting ourselves and saying, oh, you really did that for selfish reasons. But, you know, rejoice when we do something virtuous. Yeah. So that's all part of spiritual practice, I think. Anything else about honesty? Okay, all of these are really about acting, you know, the way I think about it, acting in ways so that others would want to be around us. For, you know, we think of someone like Geshe Gelug. You know, he seems to me to embody all 16 guidelines here. Or Lama Zopa Rinpoche, the spiritual director of the FPMT, or the Dalai Lama. You know, these are the living embodiments of someone who lives in this way. And so we're kind of naturally drawn to them. Some kind of like Harry met Sally. I want what he's having. I want what she's having. You know, very much sort of thing. We see people who live by these guidelines and we find it, at least I do, and I think a lot of people do, we find it, we're kind of drawn to that, we say. You know, there's something going on there that I would like to experience in my own life. And we should be very happy that we have the actual examples of that here in our lifetime. We don't have, you know, we have Geshe Gelug here. You know, it's just amazing that we have someone who embodies all the teachings, you know, living here in Raleigh, North Carolina. And that's something that we should really take advantage of. He's out of town for a couple months, but he'll be coming back. And I think even if sometimes he teaches on quite difficult subjects, even if you don't quite get the core of what he's teaching in terms of the intellectual content, just being in the presence of someone like that is incredibly beneficial. Well, that's my personal experience. Right speech. That's a tricky one. Anyone want to take a stab at that? Andre, you have something to say? I can hear you chortling over there.
Just reading up on that right speech.
Uh-huh.
But I think, again, it begins with how we think, right? I think, and I think it also takes... It takes an amount of a bit of wisdom to be able to really use right speech.
Mm-hmm.
Example would be oftentimes we think that we see someone who's having difficulty with whatever, and our inclination is to help, and so we think there are some words that we might be able to use that might be
mm-hmm.
helpful, might be
yeah.
beneficial. And oftentimes, and then we say these things, but then it makes the situation worse.
Yeah.
You know, and so we think we're using right speech, and maybe what we're saying is right, but the timing is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that's why I was chuckling, because it's a tricky one. Right speech.
Yeah. Back to Jim over here. Wait, right behind you, and then.
I think to me, if we combine all the four category on the Hobby Act, if our speech is kind and if we are honest and we are sincere, then it's going to be right speech.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's kind of a result of some of the others. Mm-hmm. Okay. Back to Jim.
I think I try to keep, when I'm talking to people and I'm trying to do right speech, I think of a few different things. So it has to be truthful or honest.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be helpful or actionable. So something that somebody can use. It has to be timely. So,
mm-hmm.
And I guess relevant, you know, to the to what you're talking about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, up here.
Yeah, I was just thinking sometimes right speech may be to say nothing at all as well.
Excellent. Yeah, great point. Zip your lips. Zip your lips, as Venerable Rabina says. Yeah. I'm not just saying the first thing that comes to mind. Zip your lips. Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, excellent point. Okay, what they say here in the book is, right speech is a commitment to use words skillfully in a way that will bring peace and happiness to ourselves and to the people around us. It is about using our speech to take away fear, to bring hope, to make people laugh and feel closer to one another. This is how we share who we are. And they bring a quote from, they include a quote from Chief Joseph Nez Perce, First Nation. It does not take many words to speak the truth. And then Mark Twain says, noise proves nothing. Often the hen who has merely laid an egg cackles as if she had laid an asteroid. Yeah, so it means not saying things that don't need to be said. Yeah, that's an important part of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, group, you got a question coming.
Well, I find that, you know, when I'm by myself, I'm trying to manage my mind working pretty well.
Yeah.
As soon as I get around my friends or other people, well, things just break loose, you know. I wonder if anybody has any suggestions, because I want to try to work on my behavior when I'm around other people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if other people have this problem or not.
Well, tell us a little bit about what you mean by break loose.
I think I just sort of forget to mind my mind because I'm so busy cackling and talking. And maybe it's my age group and women, but, I mean, we can talk.
Uh-huh. Anybody want to take a stab at that? Sandy.
I have the same problem. One of the things that I've done is, technology-wise, I have an iPhone and I have a mindfulness bell, and that I've set to about every 45 minutes or just whenever. And believe it or not, that's actually really helped me to just, because we get so busy in our everyday lives with friends, family, work, all of the things going on, and just having this little bell go off, all of a sudden it's like, oh, yeah. So that's one thing that I've done. Another thing that I've done is for my friends that are outside of the center, I will say, when we tend to get off track or if things start going down a path that I don't want it to for my mind, then I'll just say, you know, I'll just try to change the subject. But those are just two methods that I'm working on. The mindfulness bell is working for me. So try that one.
Mm. Yeah, back there. Mm-hmm.
I struggle with this one too. Over the past couple of years, as I've started to put lots of these practices into practice, I've been really challenged by it, because you just realize just how gossipy people can be and how divisive people can be. And without realizing it. And I just choose sort of not to engage and observe that behavior and realize, oh, well, I was really in this before, and I feel that I'm making some progress in my own practice by not engaging with it and just observing it. But I don't know. I've thought a lot about that too. Do I change my friends? You know, it's not an easy one because, you know, relationships are important even if things aren't perfect.
Andre.
I can tell you, it's not just women. Yeah, I got that one too. But this is how I deal with it. I really can't help myself because it's just who I am. I'm a talker, so I try to make sure that anything that I say is going to be beneficial. I'm always thinking about like what am I saying. You know, and then I want to make sure if I'm going to say something, it's kind of like Thumper thing, you know, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. You know, that's, you know, it's like, you know, if I'm going to say something, it's got to be something that can benefit other people. So I'm always talking about with my friends at work, no matter where I am, I'm always talking Dharma. I do it in a way that no one is put off by that, and they think, oh, this guy's trying to convert me or anything like that. They all know that I'm Buddhist. And I'm always talking about Dharma. I'm always talking about kindness and love and compassion and these kinds of things. And I find that people like that conversation. And so that's how I deal with it. Sometimes I do watch a lot of news and stuff. And in one sense, I need to watch it because I'm a teacher. And so I teach social studies, and so I need to be able to. And so when I present these topics, I always try to present it in a way that people can see it's okay to have your opinion about this, but think about what you're thinking, and think about what you're saying, and so forth, and then express your political viewpoint or whatever it may be. But always do it with compassion, always do it with respect. So I just realized we live in a, this is samsara, as the Rabin always says, this is samsara, and so we got to find a way to make it as wonderful as we possibly can. You know, still some sorrow, but it doesn't have to be hell. You know, so, yeah.
One more comment, and then we'll go move on.
I found myself kind of going back and forth. It kind of makes me think of what you were saying about sort of the middle way, because I either sort of, you know, find myself like just relinquishing control and indulging myself and like, you know, God, you know, just letting myself go there. And then on the other hand, sometimes I can feel so judgmental of like, you know, other people who are doing that. And it's just really funny to see my own mind. And that's what I'm trying to learn how to do, is just watch my own mind and, you know, recognize that, oh, you may now be aware of how that is not helpful to engage in that kind of talk. But, you know, you're still learning, too, because you wouldn't feel the judgment and you turn around and feel, you know, when other people are doing it. Then I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, and he said that something he's trying to practice, which was just a fascinating image to me. He said he is trying to think of his mouth as sort of a cocoon, and he's letting, like, before he speaks, he tries to let it kind of, you know, what do you call, what's the word, metamorphize into a butterfly before he lets any words leave his mouth. And I just thought that was a beautiful image, you know, so that kind of stuck with me.
Yeah, I think that's a real part of spiritual training for those of us who are not Buddhas or Bodhisattvas. You know, just keep your mouth shut. You know, don't just let things just spew out, but just start to think before you speak. For me personally, that's a huge part of spiritual training. Yeah. Just to sometimes willing to be silent. Yeah, and not just go. Okay, thank you everyone for the discussion. We're going to jump very quickly to generosity. I think everyone has an idea of what generosity is. In Buddhism, there are three types of generosity that the Buddha described. Does anybody know what they are? We touched on these a couple weeks ago, I think. Specifically, the first one is material generosity, giving food, shelter, clothing, financial aid to people who need that or to somewhere that will be used beneficially. Second one, anyone have an idea what the second one is? What's the second way we can be generous? Kind of said, the Buddha said offering the Dharma, offering the teachings. And it doesn't have to be Buddhist teachings, but offering what your spiritual progress, giving that, to, sharing that with others, not holding on to it, saying, this is my practice, it's for me, but sharing it with others is generosity. And the third one, and these are considered an order of greatness. What's the greatest kind of generosity we can give to others? Anybody, I touched on that briefly. It's a sense of safety or fearlessness, that people feel safe. So that's the greatest thing that we can give to others, a sense that in our presence that they're safe, that they're protected, that they're looked out for. So three types of generosity, material, dharma, and safety. So we'll just go end on that. And fortuitously, this was not planned, but we're going to have a little presentation from Jim Green and Colleen and Tony and Sandy about generosity, I think, right? So I'll turn the floor over to Jim for the remaining minutes of the discussion.
Okay, and just a very brief explanation of what's going on today is this is the launch of our annual appeal. So those of you that are familiar with PBS and NPR and stuff, welcome to the Kanapa Center version of that. I'd like to introduce Jim Green. Oh, actually, no, I'm going to switch it up. Tony and Colleen, I'd actually like to start with you guys. If you could, I'm going to let you hear from the heart first, and then we'll get into some of the details.
What do we have to do to get a coffee cup? That's what I want.
You know what? I'll get you a coffee cup. Anybody that goes along with this, I'll figure it out. All right? Okay. You want a coffee cup? I'll get you a coffee cup.
Hi, everyone. They asked us to write this letter, and, you know, first I was a little apprehensive. Will it be beneficial? Will I be able to do it well? And I wasn't sure, but, you know, I set an intention, and we did it. We came up with it. And, you know, with having three kids, it's often difficult to kind of just sit down and practice or sit down and do anything. But what I try to do is incorporate when I do things for the center as part of my practice and build that in. And I'm really happy I'm able to do that. This is the letter we kind of came up with, and it explains a little bit about ourselves and, you know, why we're here and why we do the things that we do. So, dear Kanapa Center friends, what we have learned at Kanapa Center pervades every aspect of our lives in so many ways that to express our gratitude in words seems almost impossible. We're a married couple now, but we came to Kanapa Center separately as individuals who did not know one another and met in a Discovering Buddhism class. This essential part of our lives, our marriage, became possible because other people were kind enough to first establish the Kanapa Center and then to offer a variety of classes that could teach us about the mind, ourselves, and reality. Someone was kind enough to ensure that child care was provided so that single parents such as ourselves could come and learn about Buddhism. What we found at Kanapa Center is a community built on a foundation of love, compassion, and a determination to benefit others. One of the particular strengths of this community is that it is both connected by lineage to the traditions and teachings of Buddhism and also skillful in allowing those traditions and teachings to thrive and grow in the West by meeting the needs of people with modern Western lives. Certainly that is us. Between the two of us, we have three children. Meadow is 11, Sebastian is 6, and our baby Tenzin is coming up on 16 months. Our house is small, often loud with the sounds of playing children, and sometimes loud with the frustrated voices of grumpy parents. But we practice love. We want each other to be happy. We practice compassion. We want each other to be free from suffering. We practice forgiveness, and we teach our children that their mistakes do not define them, and that anger is the pain that hurts us all. We had an intuitive understanding of some of these concepts prior to coming to Kadampa Center, but here we found them clearly articulated in the teachings of the Buddha. Through listening to teachings, discussing and debating, and seeing examples set by our teachers and longtime practitioners, we have gained the tools to better integrate love, compassion, and patience into our lives. For us, Kadampa Center is so much more than a building, a place for meditation, or even a Dharma Center. It is our community, where we're on the same path as those around us, trying, through perseverance, dedication, and working on our minds to make the world a better place. We understand that our little kind words, moments of patience, and attempts at peace in our own home contribute to our own children's future in the better world, and we treasure having others to share that journey. We want our community to continue to thrive, so we are very happy to contribute monetarily to Kadampa Center with the wish that all sentient beings benefit from our offering. And we are so happy that our children are able to contribute to the tapestry of kindness that is our Kadampa Center community with their small hands, voices, and love. With hands folded in gratitude, Colleen Mitchell and Tony Allen.
Thank you.
Now I'm going to introduce Jim Green, who's a member of our Financial Development Committee, the FDC. You may have heard those initials before.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. So I want to say thank you to all the wonderful volunteers. I want to say thank you to you both for doing this kind of last minute, and thank you to Robbie for practicing a lot of these when we came to him last minute. Patience, let's say kindness.
Mm-hmm.
He definitely monitored his speech. So I think it was good that he was teaching those today. We're a largely volunteer center, and so we don't have a whole lot of built-in cost. But what we do is essential for bringing stuff like this to you, offering classes free of charge. And, we rely on people like Tony and Colleen to help us run this center. And we rely on all of us to practice generosity in order to keep these things going. I don't know, does anybody here know how many Buddhists are in the RTP area, or where that puts us on the national scale?
I know that we're in the top 10
yeah.
in the nation
mm-hmm.
As fast as mm-hmm. growing spirituality in the nation.
Yeah. I think the thing that I saw said that as far as when people are asked on the census to self-identify, that we're the 10th largest metropolitan area in the United States for Buddhists. And so we're already kind of got a large group of people mm-hmm. here. But among FPMT centers, certainly, we're mm-hmm. one of the largest
yeah.
FPMT centers in the nation. And then I think we are the largest FPMT center in the nation that offers teachings free of charge.
Mm.
So, I mean, we've got an incredible thing going here. There aren't many centers that have a stupa out front. In that vein, we have an annual appeal, and we're changing things a little bit this year on what we're asking people to do for the annual appeal. So we're asking people to get involved on a sustainer level. I think you guys have heard this terminology before. We've referenced NPR to this morning already, but to do that creates this more sustainable model. It allows people to more easily give on a monthly basis, and we can rely on that instead of these one-time things that come in. Sporadically, we're able to predict. We're also able to look at the future a little bit better when we do that. We say, if we've seen the growth that we've seen over the past few years at this center, I mean, the future, the next 5 years, is going to be huge growth. So we need that kind of sustainable commitment from people. So we're asking you to go online and become a sustainer to the Kadampa Center. And you can go online to kadampacenter.org/donate. There's a donate button. You can click on Tony and Colleen's beautiful picture to, and their family to also get there. We're sending out letters to people who are current annual appeal donors to ask them to participate as well. We're going to have forms out front for you to pick up to sign up to be a sustainer as well. If you've done this, please, when you do it, please consider the whole year worth of giving. So not just what we would normally ask you to do would just be this short look at a small portion of our budget, but the whole year. So what you give in General Donna, we honestly have seen a drop-off in General Donna donations. So we don't know exactly what causes that, whether it's then we moved to the bowls, whether that did it, or whether the envelopes haven't been good enough, or the boxes. If you would please consider maybe adding that into your annual sustainer donation, that'd be the best thing for everybody. It's easier for you, so you don't forget your cash when you know. I know I do. I don't even think I have any today. So good thing I've put that into my sustainer donation. And if you've never participated in the annual appeal before, we want you to know that we want to make this as accessible as possible, that you're part of the success of the Kadampa Center, and we really invite you to participate at whatever level you can give, you know, $5 a month, whatever you can give. We just want you to become a part of our family. I think that's it. Is that it?
The light from the mortgage and the things for the building, but it's also going to allow us to continue to have the free teachings from our Sangha and Geshe-la and Robbie and the Buddhism in a nutshell and discovering Buddhism and all of the things that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And as a volunteer organization, if we can take our eyes off of, you know, just the everyday, you know, workings of the center, start looking to this phenomenal children's program that's growing, start looking to some of these other things that we'd like to be able to do, our efforts can be more towards that than just keeping the lights on. So everything that you can do is phenomenal, and we appreciate it. And I think Robbie can speak very well to this. I mean, 20 years? 20 years?
Do
you ever think we'd be here?
No. It's
and we're here because of people like Robbie who started this whole thing 20 years ago and all of the efforts that they put in. And so we are hoping to give to the future as well. So,
okay. Yeah, I have nothing to add. Thank you, Sandy.
Well, yeah, and thank you all for your support. You've been tremendously helpful in the past, so thank you so much.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Sandy. Thank you, Tony and Colleen. You want to segue us out, Venerable Andre? Yeah, okay. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Turn to the pink page. I'm going to present the dedication of verses from Master Shantideva, a long life prayer for someone's Dalai Lama. And then prayer for spontaneous to fulfill all wishes, long life prayer for.
Plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled, the mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth. May those weak find joy. And in happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments, whatever diseases are in the world. May they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid. Sort of the miseries of the world. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and joy. All-powerful Chinrai Zigdenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. Savior of the snow and land, seasons and transmigratory beings. Yes,
the one who mastered his speech at a very young age, the one who was the patient who received the name of water, the one with great patience who spread the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa on bliss and bore, Lama ornament of the yellow hat tradition, please remain until samsara ends. You are up to the subduer's moral way, who serves as a bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Majjhana's victorious doctrine. Savior, myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long. Om Tare Tuta Ture Soha. Om Tare Tuta Ture Soha. Om Tare Tuta. Om Tare Tuta Ture Soha. Om Tare Tuta Ture Soha. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. Thank you, Andre. Thank you, Tony and Colleen. Thank you, Jim and Sandy. And thank you, everyone, for your participation this morning.